Hello and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host Liam Donoghue. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own careers. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us on SoundCloud, iTunes or Spotify, or you can join our Slack community. Thank you, enjoy the show. Hey there, hello. You're listening to another episode of Venturi's Voice. Our guest today is Stuart McGarry. He is the successful founder of several startups and is a community beacon in London. We're going to be chatting to him today about community, about startup journeys and about gaining experience in a technical career. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today. How are you?
Yes, I'm well, man. I'm well. I'm looking forward to our conversation and talking about my varied career.
Yeah, there's a lot to go at. You know, you've done quite a bit of mentoring in the past, in the present even. You're still doing it now. You've founded several successful startups and you've spent some time working in the corporate sphere. So, you know, it's a really mixed bag of experience to go up there. But before we delve into that, I always like to start the podcast just by asking our guests to give us a detailed sort of like overview or like walkthrough of their career journey, you know, so bits you've done and, you know, what decisions have you made led you to where you are today, to this podcast, really. So, yeah, run at that.
No, that's a brilliant question. I'm very lucky. I had a good support family system growing up in Northern Ireland, and I was always encouraged to, you know, be the best and be creative and do what I wanted to do, and, you know, the value of money and things like that. And I always knew I kind of wanted to work for myself and be an entrepreneur and create value. I always got frustrated as a child when I seen inefficiencies in the marketplace. So, you know, I was that annoying kid asking why something happened and, you know, always saying why. My mom likes to tell those stories a lot. And, even school trips, I remember arranging buy for one offers or buy two, you know, get one free offers with everyone so that I would get the free product for my gift. And so I've always had that kind of entrepreneurial urge. So, I was very lucky. When I was 16, I got a bit of birthday money. I think it was about £300 from my grandmother. And I said, I want to use that, put that to good use. I don't want to, you know, just waste it because it's from my wee granny. And I actually used that and started doing a bit of investing and share dealing. And after a few years, it actually built that money up to about £30,000. So knowing my, the entrepreneurial passion, I went to the University of Strathclyde, which has a brilliant entrepreneurship program. Always knew I wanted to run my own company. And during that time at university, I used that money to start a company, Crafts Cupboard. And it went quite well, done well, actually ended up selling it. And, you know, going back to university as well and having fun time and kind of good life experience. That kind of started me on the journey. I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur and learn from the best and kind of keep going. Like you said in the intro, I think varied experience, varied career. I never really had a choice. I always have to be out there and create value for people. And I just hate inefficiencies, quite frankly.
So, yeah.
That's the background to sort of me being an entrepreneur. But, God, that's 10 years ago now. So we're kind of three or four startups, couple of experience in the corporate world as well, seeing the other side. And it's all kind of led now to where I am in London and kind of very involved in the startup scene and mentoring people and helping out others and things like that.
Yeah, it's really good. I want to pick up on what you said there about hating inefficiencies. Did you find that the startups that you were building or sort of like the ideas you have, do they often come from like personal issues in the way that you can see things or there's things in your own life that aren't going, like, you know, obviously you see a problem and you want to solve it. Is that how you come to start like that startup process?
Completely. I'm like I said, I was lucky to have good morals, so I was brought up, and I hated seeing people getting taken advantage of or people being told they couldn't do anything. And growing up in Northern Ireland, you know, with our history in that country, we We have the smartest people in the United Kingdom, but we never really got that opportunity. Sorry, that's me going off GCSE and A-level results, you know, with a good education. Yeah. So I always had that feeling of I wanted to make things better, and that was driven, obviously, by my upbringing. So whenever I seen a business or someone getting taken advantage of, or, you know, telemarketing started being a thing, and you just could smell and see things that didn't feel right, and I always felt it was my job to fix that. You know, I played sport as a youngster quite a lot, and might have been like the captain of the team and led people, and kind of always felt it was nearly my duty to fix those things. So like the first company, for example, actually was a university project, and we basically just came up with a marketplace model. So it could have been adapted to any industry, but we'd seen that Etsy was doing quite well in America. So I said, all right, I'll do the same thing in the UK, you know, before Etsy was over here. So just spotting those gaps, spotting the trends, consuming information, I think is, you know, very key. And that, yeah, to go back essentially to the question, it's inefficiencies for me, I just want to fix. I think the world should be, you know, a certain way.
Mm-hmm. But we don't want the machines to take over. We don't want to automate everything.
Yeah, completely. And I'm actually, you know, I when I talk to people, or I talk to staff or people I work with, I always talk about the win-win-win scenario. And a lot of people think, you know, what are you talking about? I think in the UK in particular, people think someone has to suffer for someone to gain. But with my businesses, I usually say, well, no, all three parties can benefit if it's done in the right way. You know, so with Koala, we were the, you know, it was a travel company. You know, we charged a fair price to the customers who couldn't do experiences elsewhere. We still made money because we negotiated with the properties and, you know, streamlined our process. But then the properties also got, you know, direct straight income, even though we were maybe paying cheaper than you would have paid on Airbnb. So that's what I mean about the win-win-win. It doesn't need to be stepping on someone to succeed. Everyone can do well if everyone sort of agrees on values, I think.
Yeah. Let's go back to that in a minute, because I want to ask you something else first. But talking again about like startup and the entrepreneurial spirit, do you think that nowadays, certainly, like the idea of entrepreneurship is a lot more mainstream? I think, you know, back in like the 60s and 70s, your entrepreneur was sort of like this wacky inventor working out of the shed. Whereas now, you know, there's accelerators and programs everywhere. But do you think a lot of people get into this idea of starting their own business without like really understanding what it takes, or, as we said before, having that problem, that personal problem that they want to solve? I mean, what's your take on that statement?
It's really interesting, and it's a subject I could probably fill our whole time with, because I think so many people love the idea of being an entrepreneur, and they love the title now, but they don't actually realize that when you're an entrepreneur, you're doing every job. You know, you're the admin assistant, you're the marketing person, you have to get your sleeves up, and it takes a very specific type of person to be able to do that. A few years ago, when I first started out, a lot of people would have put me down for trying to be an entrepreneur, and they would have basically, because they knew they couldn't do it themselves. It's a very British thing as well. Then now, because I've had a little bit of success and they've seen I'm doing well, they suddenly want to congratulate me. But I do, I think there's a natural tendency, especially maybe in the United Kingdom, that people maybe put down the process and don't encourage you. And I've worked in America quite a lot, and you know, if you fail, all they want to do is talk about, okay, so how are you going to learn from that and do better? And there's a lot more positivity. I think we in the United Kingdom sometimes are scared to take that risk and scared to fail.
Yeah.
Learn from it. But yeah, I the brand of being an entrepreneur, I've met so many people that they care more about that than building a good business. And we maybe see that with companies that don't actually focus on making money. You know, they just want VC money and loads of users, but their business models are terrible. So
what you've said there has been echoed quite a lot by several different people in our podcasts.
Yeah, well, essentially, I think it was always instilled in me that a good business should make money.
Yeah.
Even if it's a tech company, you know, I grew up seeing a lot of people in the building trade, for example, back in Northern Ireland. And it just never made sense to me that you shouldn't make money from the start. But I've had staff. I actually had a staff member question if we had enough money in the company because she was like, why are you putting pressure on me to make money?
Yeah.
And it's because she had been working in the startup scene in London so long.
Yeah.
No one had ever actually said, we would like to make money. You know, like, and that mentality, that was one of the most shocking things I've ever heard in startup land because, you know, it's very easy to get, you know, carried away with all, oh, let's build Facebook and then or Uber and we'll get money 10 years down the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but when it comes down to like the brass tacks of a one man band and you need somewhere to, well, you need to know where the next meal's coming from, don't you? It's like that eat to kill mentality a bit. And I mean, that's going too far in the other way where you sort of get to blood hungry salespeople, but there's a middle ground somewhere, isn't there? You can't just do nice things to do nice things all the time if you're building a business.
You can validate your business model by making money. You can, you know, when I mentor a lot of people, and a lot of the people that come to me when I mentor, it's, you know, like social enterprises. So they're trying to do good and help the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, at least have a year of savings saved up that you can live off, because then you're not going to be pressured. I think the startup loan scheme in the UK is brilliant because you can get, you know, that seed capital. There is mechanisms out there to support you, but I don't see why you can't try and make money. Even if you have a tech product, you know, hustle a bit, you know, try and get customer validation. You know, at the minute I'm building a platform, for example, for sports, and it's a tech product, but I'm going out there and playing five-a-side or playing, you know, netball with people, and, you know, you're making money off each session, and then you're building the tech platform as well while you're building the community. So,
Yeah,
I think a lot of people in, you know, see Silicon Valley and see what they see on the TV, and the actual basics of running a company are very hard to actually learn and get in your head.
One thing I'm going to, let's jump around a bit. So you've obviously run several startups during your career so far, but you also spent a while working in corporate. You worked at Deloitte as a consultant. So did you go corporate into startup, or did you do startup for a bit, then go to work in Deloitte and then go back to startups? How did that sort of career trajectory go? And I'm just quite interested to hear about it, because, you know, you see a lot of people who spend all their life, or maybe a large amount of their career, working in a corporate environment, and then they'll go into the startup world and be like, oh my God, this is madness, I can't deal with this, and jump straight back. So how was that jump for you? What were the differences between working in startups and working in big organizations, and is it good to do both? What's your take?
So honestly, I nearly done it out of necessity. I was a very young kid who, you know, I got a little bit of cash in for that first company.
Yeah.
And I probably took it, you know, like, oh, let's go, you know, and party and enjoy myself, and let's just go to uni and learn. And I'd committed some cash to, you know, investments and things like that. And it actually got to this stage where I was like, I've planned this badly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm pretty open talking about it. I was like, I'm gonna run out of cash here, you know. And then I was in a little bit of a creative funk, to be honest, because I had all these ideas and had done well reasonably young, but you can also then get in a funk because of that. You know, you let it get to your own head, or you can't see a natural company or whatever. So I basically, you know, something happened in my personal life that I was like, yeah, I actually wouldn't mind taking a job and someone else looking after me for a while. And that's when I very kindly got offered a job in PwC. And then I went to Deloitte. And in those 3 years, the work wasn't particularly challenging. You're, you know, essentially making presentations. But you learn a lot about stakeholder management and working with clients. And I actually learned how the world works in those 3 years. So if anyone comes to me now, actually, and says, I want to be an entrepreneur, I either tell them to go and work at a really cool startup and see how it's doing, you know. So if you want to have a fintech company, go and work at Monzo for a couple of years and then start, you know, your company afterwards, because then you learn and you see. So to answer your question directly, I didn't enjoy it. It benefited me. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. And I'd done it out of necessity, but I kind of, what I learned throughout that time, The people I worked with were fantastic. I lived in hotels essentially for 3-4 years, so I actually learned a lot about the hospitality and travel industry. And then, I seen the opportunity to go back into the startup world and didn't enjoy the corporate world, obviously. But looking back on it, it was a really valuable experience. And I'm able now to be a rare voice that understands corporate land and startup land. And I think a lot of kids, especially in startup land, don't get that as much. Like professionalism can be a thing. If you've always worked in these startups and co-working spaces, even how you address people or emails or, you know, decorum, things like that. So working in that environment actually taught me a lot, and I appreciate it now looking back. Doesn't mean I would want to go back to that environment.
So what do you think about the sort of trend where you've got some of these big corporates who are trying to now act like startups, so, you know, they're trying to, you know, sort of reduce feedback times, and they're trying to be these maybe more kooky, hip sort of environments to attract maybe more young talent. There's a company in Manchester, obviously I won't name names, but, you know, very big company, which I think hosts servers, and they've got like a slide in the office. There's a social media company, they've got a slide in the office, but they're a 300 person big sort of corporate business. Like, do you think that these sort of like old guard corporates can learn anything and can adopt things from startup companies, and should they?
I hope they would, but I don't think they will, unfortunately. I think you can dress it up as much as you want. And it might not be a popular opinion, but essentially the business model of these larger companies is to break your soul and make you rely on them. So they kind of bring in very smart people, say this is how it should be done, sort of lower their confidence, then build up their confidence so that they feel loyal to them again. And that's maybe a strong opinion, and maybe I'm just going on all the corporates I've worked with, some of the biggest companies, you know, in Britain.
Yeah.
But transitioning then from that to startup land and trying to kind of, you know, be confident. Again, I think people working from home, people are a lot more now focused on wellness. Mm-hmm. But if I'm being honest, I don't think it'll be the corporate world that changes that. I think it's more the people, society. You know, a lot more people now, you don't stay in the same job for 20 years. You know, you'll leave if you're not happy, and the corporates need to adapt to that. Mm-hmm. But there's also always going to be that element of structure, and certain people just need to do certain jobs. You know, not everyone can be that creative entrepreneur, or can be that person that, you know, I actually really respect people who just say, I'm brilliant at this and I want to be the best at this. You know, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, someone doing the cleaning or someone doing an admin role, the founder of the company, just someone knowing what their strengths are and saying, I want to be the best at this. I really respect that, and I think in the corporate environment, that could be interesting to see how that goes, you know, with flexible work and changes of offices and things like that. Mm-hmm.
So let's have one more question about the corporate and startup divide. You know, have you seen before, because you said there, obviously, some people can't do the entrepreneurial thing, you know, it's very fashionable to want to be an entrepreneur now, but have you seen like cases where people have jumped from like that corporate sort of company where, you know, there's a lot of bureaucracy, there's a lot of red tape, there's a lot of like systems in place that mean that in certain situations you can like half-ass what you're doing, and then you get thrust into this tiny startup where every single thing matters and like you have to be delivering value very, very quickly. Have you seen cases where that's happened and then people have just been like, no, this isn't for me, and went back to PwC or wherever?
Yeah, essentially, many times. And I think there's a risk factor with that. And I also appreciate people, you know, who have personal commitments and families and things like that, and they don't want to take that risk. And, you know, I think there's a way to do it. I always like say when I mentor people, you can tell usually straight away if someone's got it. But a lot of the reason they want the mentor is because they still want that structure of being told what to do. But then I myself have mentors who, you know, run very, very successful companies, and, you know, we just go out for a beer every once in a while and have a chat, and it's really valuable. So I think anyone can do it, but you have to have that openness to it and not think this is how things should be done, which maybe happens in some of the corporate environments. But, you know, a big topic entrepreneurship a lot of people talk about now, which is, you know, just innovation within the company. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of value in that, and a lot of people have put in, sometimes it doesn't work because it's too sector specific, you know, so they can't adapt. But, you know, one of the biggest investment funds and at the minute is Channel 4. You know, Channel 4 are investing in all these cool tech startups and all, you know, instead of just selling advertising. So you kind of, I think with these corporates, it's just about this new generation of leaders coming through. And for me personally, I love seeing more female leaders and people from different backgrounds. And a lot of time I've been the only person in the room that didn't go to Oxford or Cambridge, for example. So yeah. Seeing these people come through and run these companies, it's incredible. And I think it will change with time, but there's always going to be certain structures and certain needs to stop it from completely being like a startup. And you don't necessarily want it to be like a startup sometimes.
Yeah. Let's move on a bit and talk about some other stuff we wanted to cover. Certainly about creating psychological security and like wellness initiatives. You know, you've run several startups in the past. How do you go about sort of making just people feel safe and comfortable and happy at work?
Well, the simple fact is, no one talks about it. We probably have a culture and environment where, you know yourself, everyone has to say, I'm fine, things are going well. No one wants to say, you know, they're doing badly. And maybe in the entrepreneurial journey, you never know who you're talking to or what event you're going to. So you're going to events and people are trying to sell services. You're going to events and you never know if an investor's there. So, you can't really be open. I think your partner and your family are never really going to understand unless they've went through the process. And if you work at a startup for a founder, it can be very intense because this is the founder's, you know, whole life and passion. So that's hard to work with. And the founder then themselves has crazy expectations of staff. So the whole wellness piece and talking about it, I think, is just the first thing that needs to be done. But we're in a very good stage, I think, in society where a lot of people now are feeling open to talk about this. Now, I've started talking about it quite a lot. And I get a lot of people say to me, oh, it's great to hear a man talk about these things. You know, because it's like, apparently men don't talk about wellness and looking after yourself and psychology. But I guess I just got lucky. My mother as a counsellor bought me up, you know, and things like that. So it's natural to talk about these things and look after people.
So I suppose your emphasis there on wellness, is that what led you into mentoring? Again, I've spoke to a load of mentors and it'd be quite nice. I'm always on the lookout for like people who might be able to mentor me because the idea and the schemes that run these mentoring programs just seem so beneficial for everybody involved. Is that what like drew you to it, or did you want to help other entrepreneurs?
There's nearly two answers to this because I got very lucky where I found a lovely sort of startup family in London in the Launch 22 co-working space, and they basically focus on social enterprises and really help people, you know, and you just know you're with the good guys.
Yeah.
So that was a natural progression to always stay involved and mentor other people. So selfishly, it makes me feel good when I can go and give advice and help people out and, you know, work with people and just some of the most passionate people you've ever seen in your life. It's great to be around. Fortunately, with the mentoring, a lot of, let's say, mentor schemes or programs or accelerators, the mentors on those schemes are essentially using that as a lead-in to sell services to the people. So you've got mentors who just want to get back and maybe see a little bit of themselves in you. But you might then have a mentor who is, you know, let's say owns a legal firm and wants to give you, you know, bite-sized advice, but then obviously they're expecting to get paid eventually out of that. So I think there's a fine line, but not necessarily having a mentor, but definitely having a community of other people who understand your process is, you can't really put a price on that, who you're around and who you talk to. And that wellness side of it is a piece, yeah. Like I've said, the mentoring gave me a glimpse into that, and I love doing it because of that.
Yeah, that's quite interesting what you said about like basically mentors using that as like a low-key way to sort of sell services. I've not heard that before, but I'll have to keep on my guard in future if anyone offers me their services. But
it's, you know, that in a strange way, that's what I mean. I'm quite nearly conflicted about it, because if they're smart enough to use it as a lead-in and they genuinely give you really good free advice, and then say, why don't you pay me if you want more, you know, there's nothing wrong with that in a way. It's like you would actually trust that person. It's like they've passed your trial, if that makes sense. I more maybe just don't, if that's someone's ambition and that's what they want. You know, so like people I've mentored, I've ended up partnering with business or being invited to be on their board and things like that. That was never my ambition by being a mentor. It was just a natural consequence. And I think building those natural relationships is the best way to do it. But then I've also had entrepreneurs I admire, and I've just messaged them being like, I like what you're doing. Can I buy you a beer? You know, you know, taking it from there.
Yeah. So let's move on and talk about the Cult London, which is a community that you're building for entrepreneurial people to sort of network and get together and sort of maybe bring together everything we've spoke about on this podcast into like one whole community. Am I on the right track with that?
Yeah, completely. And, you know, this is one of the first times I'm talking about it, so it's great. And, you know, I'm really enjoying feedback. But essentially, it started off just as a side project and a hustle for me, you know, on the side, because it's so lonely being a founder. There's not enough trust networks out there. There's not enough people backing you in the corner. And I've built this nice community of people around me and just seen the need for it. I've been involved in all these accelerator programs, worked with venture capital companies. You know, I feel like I know the industry inside out, and I also think it's quite fragmented when it comes. So there might be there's a couple of great clubs in London for founders, but it's only focused around female founders, for example.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite unhealthy in the long run to exclude people, you know, from groups. I actually had an example where my partner was giving a speech at one of these events, and I couldn't go and watch her because I was a man.
Yeah. You know?
And I love that these groups exist, and I think they're serving a purpose. But me being brought up by, you know, strong women and being surrounded, I'm more a fan of an inclusive society, an inclusive community, and this is kind of where the cult came from. Basically, me saying, doesn't matter what industry you work in, it doesn't necessarily matter what stage you are, but let the cult be your support network. You know, it's a paid service, essentially, where you're joining the club. You know, we have a great tagline where it's like, anyone can apply, but it doesn't mean everyone will get in. And it's just us saying that, and we use the tagline, you know, rock star mindset. So it's really just about saying, if you want to change the world, if you want to leave it a better place, here's a community of people that want, you know, to be your friend, want to support you. And it's very much a passion project of mine. After all these years of working in startups, I've essentially said, okay, here's everything that entrepreneurs are not receiving, and I'm going to fix that. And again, it's that win-win-win, you know, environment.
So how long's the cult been going on for then? It sounds like quite a new endeavor. Have you got a lot of traction going at the moment? Are you on Meetup, or is it a bit more exclusive than that?
Yeah, right? It started originally. God, I'm trying to put a timeline on it, because it informally nearly started, you know, with some of my mentees and some of my other entrepreneurial friends. We might just meet up for a drink and, you know, have a chat. And it's nearly like a support group, you know, people you're able to talk to going through the same thing as you. And then I kind of said, okay, well, I want to develop that for other people. So I actually, in my previous role at Koala, we were using Meetup quite a lot. So I said, I'll set up a Meetup group, you know, for all our founders. It started casually, and then it was very much, if I want to actually create this community and provide the best value for people, it needs to be a bit more formal, you know, it needs to be a business. But it actually works out that overall, you know, by being a paying subscriber to the cult, you're getting over £1,000 benefit probably for the sake of an 80 quid membership, you know. It's very much set up with longevity and community build in mind. So yeah, it started originally as a passion project, and then just so many, you know, I think I have a pretty healthy waiting list already of people that want to join. And it's really resonating with people, that there's no pretense. It doesn't matter where you went to university, you know, people from across industries are gelling, you know. It's sitting having conversations with someone who owns a charity, someone who owns a web development company, a life coach, you know, a prop tech person. Bringing together all these people, the connections then, whether it's friendships or, you know, people working together. So we have strict no selling, and all these people then actually do end up working together, but because they know no one's trying to sell to them, mm-hmm. they relax and they're themselves, and they kind of, yeah, it became so valuable to me that I had to give it more attention. I had to make it a proper concept, because I've been there. I've seen how bad the journey can be. I've seen how good it can be. I've seen lack of support, and I just hope, with my experience and still being relatively young, I can relate to young and old entrepreneurs and help them. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what the cult is.
So I suppose a great way to end the podcast then would be to ask, if anyone is interested in joining the cult, how do they go about doing it? Where can they find you? And what's the process for applying?
Yeah, it's basically just a case of submitting your details on thecultlondon.co.uk. I hate that it actually says The Cult London, because it is a pan-UK organisation I'm setting up. It's just our obviously face-to-face events will be in London, but I'm very much setting it up that it's service that everyone, you know, from around the world actually can benefit from and establish. So yeah, it's not a case of we need to interview you and apply. It's more just, you know, you submit your details, and if you're obviously suitable to join, you know, so for example, if someone wants to join, but you can very honestly tell that they're just there because they're trying to sell services to the other members, you know, like a IT solutions company from Romania, you know, they'll maybe not get in. Mm-hmm. But if, you know, if you're a genuine founder and you genuinely want to be in the startup ecosystem, you want the wellness, you want the support, yeah, come and join the cult.
Excellent. Great. So any listeners out there, you know where to head. We'll put a link to your resources in the show notes that go along with the episode as well. But Stuart, it's been really, really good chatting to you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, mate, it's been a genuine pleasure.
Yeah, excellent. Catch you in a bit.
Yes, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this Venturi's Voice podcast. You can find links to any resources mentioned in the episode in the show notes on our website. If you enjoyed the show and want to hear more, you can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes and Spotify. We also have a Slack community, which you can join via the link on our homepage at venturi-group.com. Thanks for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you again.